You're listening to the Newsmakers podcast from MLB.com.
Mr. Rock, Bill Latson, welcome to Newsmakers. We have a lot going on today. I went to see the Nationals and had great conversations with Dusty Baker and Jason Wirth. Regular contributor Richard Justice paid a visit and gives us the postseason award winners of 2017. Play-by-play announcer Robert Ford gives us a playoff preview regarding the Astros. I also went to see the Yankees, and I spoke to Brett Gardner, CC Sabathia, and field reporter Meredith Marakovic. We start with Dusty Baker, who is currently in his 50th year in professional baseball. Enjoy the podcast. Dusty, thank you so much for being on the show. Dusty, I don't know if you realize this, but this is your 50th year in professional baseball. You were drafted in June of 67. Is it hard to believe it's been that long?
Yeah, I was thinking about it the other day, especially when some of my homeboys sent me the pictures of our 50th year reunion the other day out of high school.
No kidding.
Yeah, so it has been 50 years since I made that decision to play pro ball. That was a major, major decision, especially back then, because if you were a pro in one sport, you were a pro in everything.
Okay.
And they invoked the Jim Thorpe law.
Right.
And once you accept money, then you're a pro in everything. So I forfeited all my basketball and football scholarships. And so if I hadn't made it, man, I hate to think about, where I'd be. And that's why I prayed on it, and the decision was given to me, and that's why. You know, I signed pro ball, but like I said, nowadays the decision's not quite as big for the kids because they can go back and play whatever they didn't play,
right.
Football or basketball or whatever. So that was a major, major, turning point in my life, and most of it was decided because my parents had gotten divorced that year, and I was the oldest of five, and felt a sense of responsibility to help my family.
I mean, Dusty, you look back at what you did. You have accomplished a lot. Do you look in the mirror and say, man, I did pretty good?
No, not yet, because I remember talking to Sadahata O. And Sadahata, I asked him years ago when I was with the Dodgers. They trained with us in the Dodger Town.
Mm-hmm.
And he was 9-time MVP. And so I asked him, man, when are you ever satisfied? I'll never forget our conversation through an interpreter. And he says that... you don't look back, and you don't look back until you retire, and then you say, okay, maybe I accomplished a few things, because he was 9-time MVP and he was going for number 10.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't have time to rest on my laurels, especially because most of my career I've gotten probably a whole lot more criticism than most people that had the success that I've had.
And you think so?
Yeah. Yeah, most of the time I hear what I don't do, mm-hmm. or what you don't like or whatever, but that kind of motivates me at the same time as it motivated me most of my life, because most of my life, you're bombarded by negatives versus by positives mm-hmm. most of the time, and so therefore, it keeps me motivated, but I don't listen to it. Other people tell me, but it's like, hey, I just go out and try to win as many ball games as I can.
Dusty, I spoke to Zach Cozart, Joey Votto. I can't tell you how many people want to see you in a World Series. You really meant a lot to a lot of people, and when you hear that, mm-hmm. but what does that mean to you?
Well, it just means that, perhaps I've been a positive influence on some young people, and I try to be as honest as possible as I can, to try to do the right thing most of the time, and have my players' well-being in mind all the time,
mm-hmm.
because they are more than just players. They're, the human beings. They have families. A lot of times, I've seen guys go from boyfriend and girlfriend to, to married, to kids. Mm-hmm. Some divorced and some got remarried. And so,
right.
In 50 years, you've seen a lot of stuff. And so, thought about, I've read like Vince Lombardi and some of the great coaches, and Bill Walsh and Al Attles were my mentors, and they cared about their players and their well-being and their families, because
mm-hmm.
that's what it's all about at the end of the ball game. That's what it's all about.
Can you believe some 50 years later your son was drafted. I know he's going to school, but isn't it hard to believe that 50 years after you were drafted, your son was drafted?
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, because I had him at 50 years old. You know, so everybody said, hey, man, you here to watch your grandson? I said, nah, man, I'm here to watch my son. And I was just hoping and praying. I try not to stand in his way or make his decisions, but I was hoping and praying that he, you know, that he indeed went to college. Mm-hmm. And because he had a different circumstance than I had.
No kidding.
You know, yeah. And so, like, I tell everybody the only thing I feel like I've missed in life is, you know, the love of grandparents, because they both died on before I could get to know them on both sides, and being a big man on college campus.
Right.
And so that's about it.
Wow. And how is your son doing now?
He's doing good. He's doing good. My wife's having a little trouble dealing with she's having a little trouble because he, you know, he's at school and she's home alone.
No kidding. In
a big house with the dogs, and so you know, he's not going to have much trouble. I try to call him every couple days, but my wife's calling him every day, and I said, son, you might as well get used to it because mama's going to be mama.
Your son was known for what he did at 2 years old at the World Series 2002. Mm-hmm. I mean, does he get used to that?
Well, he hears about it all the time. He don't really remember it. He's 3 years old, and he sees himself on TV or whenever they bring up it. I'm sure he'll see it this year again.
Yeah.
And if he, you know, and he has aspirations to make the Pro Bowl, so he'll probably always hear. And but the thing about it, he's pretty level-headed, you know, young man. You know, he's used to the spotlight, and you know, used to the, you know, different notoriety. And I just try to tell him to remain humble, at least externally. And to remember that he's a student athlete and trying to make his way through life.
Dusty, you're 68 years old, and you're still going strong. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering how much you have left in the tank.
I don't know. I'll let God tell me, and family, and myself, because I really, really enjoy what I'm doing.
You do.
I still got the same dilemma that I've always had. I'm trying to figure out why the highs of winning doesn't equal the lows of losing. Mm-hmm. And when I figure that out, then it'd probably be time to quit. And I got a few goals, things I want to do. You know, I'm closing in on, for a couple years, closing in on 2,000. Mm-hmm. And also, I'd like to win back-to-back and then call it quits. People say, hey, man, you're going to win one and then retire. People always want you to retire. Mm-hmm. But I'm always busy. I got other business interests that I'm...
Your wine business.
Yeah, I got my wine business. I got Baker Energy Team, which I'm really interested in, because I've had alternative energy at my house for 10, 11 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got a solar pond, a solar well, a solar ground mount, roof mounts, you know, that powers my whole house. That's when I really got into, and then I got into going to, while I was out those 2 years, I tried to be productive, and so I met some people with Roth Partners, and also a guy named Farid Dabachi who's an engineer that was teaching me about how my solar at my house worked, because I didn't know how it worked. All I know is, like, hey man, I didn't have a bill, and so I got really, really involved in that. And I went to a couple of conferences with Ted Roth, and I noticed that there were very, very, very few minorities there, especially in a position of ownership. And so I decided to take that route. And then when I got back into baseball, I had to call Joe Gibbs, you know, whom I didn't know,
right,
and asked Mr. Gibbs how he dealt with, I mean, he was out, I think, 10 or 11 years.
Right.
And Joe Gibbs Racing, and he came back to, you know, to win it with the Redskins. So I asked, you know, his advice and how he did it, and he gave me his advice. I heard from him the other day. He says, hey, look, you're doing pretty good, and I've never met the man.
Right.
But our first conversation, it meant a lot to me, because at the end of the conversation, he said, let me pray with you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he prayed with me over the phone that the Lord would take me in the right direction and do the right thing. And I thought that was as classy an act as I've ever encountered.
And it looked like you have done the right thing, Dusty. Is the Nationals, the Washington, better than what you thought? because you're a West Coast guy.
Yeah, I mean, the nation's capital is I think, is closing in on first place with San Francisco, which is my home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like the diversity. Love the diversity. I love the educational level. The fact that young people are there from all over the country. Mm-hmm. You know, with fresh ideas about things, and it's very, very refreshing. Plus, I've met all the leaders of the military and, a lot of people, you know, the head of Homeland Security and the head of IRS, which I didn't really, because back in the day I had a little trouble with the IRS.
You know what I mean? But it's
been cool. It's been very, very cool since I've been there. I went to, to see the president at the White House before he left office.
Right.
Barack Obama, who I knew, President Obama I knew from when I helped him campaign.
Right.
And I went to lunch with, Justice Kennedy, who's from my hometown.
Right.
And the Supreme Court, which I thought was really, really cool. So there's a lot I haven't seen yet, and I hope I get a chance to enjoy most of it before I leave.
Does he also, I spoke to a few months ago, Ryan Zimmerman and Max Scherzer, mm-hmm. and they made it clear to me how much they love you, mm-hmm. and they want you to come back. And how do you feel about them? And do you want to come back to the Nationals?
Oh, yeah. I mean, because, my next stop will be home.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
You want to end it here?
Yeah, I'd like to end it here. And I remember when Joey Votto and Jay Bruce told me, when I was out, they would call from time to time. And they said, Dusty, the Nationals would be a perfect team for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Matt Williams lost his job here, I called Matt, who also was one of my players I was very mm-hmm. close with, and asked him, his permission to talk to the Nationals. I want him to think that I knifed him for this mm-hmm. job, which I'd never do. And so he, gave me the inside scoop, and, it really, really helped that we had Bronson Arroyo mm-hmm. here from the Reds
and right.
spring training, and it was here and rehabbing for a year, year and a half, that really gave these guys a caption on me, because when a new manager comes in,
right.
You don't know.
Right.
And then everybody has their best face on, and then after a year, year and a half, and then you really get to see, the true character and who you have on the team. And I'll tell you, we got some great guys on this team, veterans, great talent. They were good before I got here.
Yeah.
And this is the only team that I've inherited that was good before I got there.
Wow.
Wow. Because the Giants were
not good.
Not next to last, to San Diego. I got to Chicago, they were last or next to last. And I got to Cincinnati, and then they were at last. Mm-hmm. And so it was really refreshing to not have to
rebuild.
Yeah, exactly. And most of the guys here were at the age where they'll probably still be here a few years.
Dusty, when the Nationals win the World Series,
mm-hmm.
what will that do for you, the rest of your psyche?
Well, I expect it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's already written. All you got to do is don't mess it up.
Yeah.
And, my psyche's not the problem. What it'll do for me, it'll just be step one in the two-step process, the way I look at it, because I always said if I win one, I want to win two,
mm-hmm.
and I will win two.
Mm-hmm.
So, if anything, I think it'd be great for the city,
mm-hmm.
and great for the, what they call it, DMZ?
DMZ.
Yeah, the DMZ, and, it's a nice place to... It's a nice place to call.
Also, final thing. Just curious. If you win it in D.C.,
mm-hmm.
You think you go in the Hall of Fame?
Well, I think I'm close already. Very close.
Mm-hmm.
And, if I manage two more years, then there's a great chance that I'll surpass 2,000. And so, but I never thought about the Hall of Fame until I was in Cincinnati. And then I started passing a whole bunch of other Hall of Famers, and so
you still pass them.
Yeah, still pass them. So hey, it's it'll be something that I think can help other managers, minority managers coming behind me, because I was hired on the preface of us not being qualified to have these positions, because that's what Al Campanis had said, and that's when they came and got, to disprove that, that's when they came and got Don Baylor, myself, Cito Gaston, and Hal McCray.
Right.
And so, I thought about that. Donnie and I came in at the same time. As a player, we were tight when I was with the Braves and he was with the Orioles. Played against each other all through the minor leagues, and then we start managing the same, the same year. And then his wife had called me when I was in Chicago on Saturday night and said, Donnie wants to talk to me. And so I had a similar situation a couple years ago, and I said, oh, I'll call somebody tomorrow. And then they passed before I could call them. So I hurried up and called him. It was probably about 10 o'clock at night, and then come to find out, Claire Smith was there.
Right.
And come to find out that he passed that next morning at 4 o'clock in the morning. Wow. So if I had waited till the next day, then my good friend, I'd never had a chance to talk to him.
You miss him, huh?
Yeah, I miss him a lot. I miss him awful lot. I mean, he was strong. He didn't complain. He was a man.
Dusty Baker, right. Thank you so much, man. Okay. Appreciate it.
My next guest is Nationals outfielder Jason Wirth, and this could be his last year with the team, and he badly wants to win a World Series.
Jason Wirth, thank you so much for being on the show. Jason, as I've told you before, you are the number one reason this team is where it is, and this team owes you a lot, I gotta tell you. And tell me how you feel about being in the fourth postseason with the Nationals.
Well, thanks, Bill. I mean, I appreciate that. I feel good. I mean, this is my team. This is my home. You know, I've put a lot of time and effort and a lot of thought into this team and my career, and I feel like this is the pinnacle. So. I feel like if we can win this year, it'll make everything, all that time and all that effort, it'll make it all worth it. You know, you play this game long enough, you put all the time in, the hours, and you don't really ask for anything in return. You know, you go into this thing blind, so to speak, and you just want to win. You know, and that's really what it comes down to. And here we are in the seventh year of my contract, and we've got an opportunity, so I can't really ask for anything more.
Jason, what will make this year different? Now, I say this, I've said this before, I think this team is better than the other teams that went to the postseason. I think this team is better.
I agree. I think, on paper, but, on paper for sure, but this team, just the feel is, it's had a good feel to it. I mean, it's been a winning club. We've been built to win, but the room has a little bit different feel to it. You know, the atmosphere in here is really good. We got a great group of guys, and people say that all the time. What does that even mean, right? But I think it's just a belief in each other and everybody around here that we're going to get the job done. So it's a great atmosphere to come to the park, go to work every day, and I think everybody believes in each other, and if you got to believe something, first for it to happen. I think across the board, everyone's there.
I love your bench. I think this is the best bench ever.
Yeah, I agree. They've done a great job upgrading the bench, the two probably the biggest moves that I've ever seen, best moves were signing Adam Lind, and then traded for Howie Kendrick, like out of nowhere. Those are two moves that are really, really good moves. So front office did a great job there, and then you look at what we did with the bullpen too, and those are some big time moves there. So I think just all across the board we've done a good job, and ownership's done a good job to put us in a position to win, and now it's up to us to go out there and win the games.
The thing I love about Lind is how he adjusted to the National League, and every time you put him in as a pinch hitter, he's always coming through.
Yeah, I mean, this guy can hit. I mean, he's the fact that he was still on the market, that late in the in the off season, and for us to get him for what we got him for is pretty ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, this guy's a really good hitter. He's coming up on 200 homers, and you know, he can hit, and to have that guy on your team and on your bench is, I mean, it's awesome. It's you got to have that. You got to have that guy. You know, when we were in Philly, we remember we got went and traded for Matt Stairs,
right?
Late in the season, and he ended up hitting a huge home run for us.
Right, in 08.
In 08, yeah.
Yes.
And we were getting beat in an NLCS game. You know, he got hit a big homer off the closer to get us to the World Series. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I believe that you got to have that guy that's capable of doing that on the bench. And Adam is from the left side, and Howie's that from the right side. So, you know, two big guys.
I want to ask you this. You were here when Rendon first came here. How good is it to see him blossom? He could be an MVP this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's one of the most underrated players in baseball right now. I mean, you watch him day in, day out, you get a sense of really how good he is. The only thing that he doesn't have going for him is that he makes everything look easy. You know, and I think that's probably why he doesn't get as much credit as he deserves. But he's a joy to have on the team. He's a great guy, a great person. And, you know, comes to the park every day ready to play and in a good mood, and, you know, is a big part of this team for sure.
Jason, I got to ask about you. How many years do you have in the tank? Obviously, you're a free agent after this year. How many more years?
Well, we'll see. I'm really just focused on getting through this season.
It's been frustrating.
Yeah, it's been a frustrating year. But, I mean, hey, I'm not that frustrated. I mean, I'm in a good spot. I'm on the team that I want to be on. I'm with, you know, back with all my buddies and my teammates. And I'm in the city that I chose to play in, and you know, my kids are growing up in this town, so I'm excited. But we'll see when the season's over, when the dust clears, we'll see where I'm at. But I mean, I don't think that I'm going to stop playing anytime soon.
Are you willing to be, you know, coming off the bench?
Yes, but I still think I can play every day. So we'll see. You know. Not really. I haven't really put too much thought into it, but we can, you know, like I said, when the dust clears and the season's over, we'll take a good hard look at it and see what type of opportunities there are out there for me. And if it's not in Washington, it's not in Washington. But you know, I'm really just focused on right here, right now, these guys, this team, this town, and I want to win.
Jason, I love the way you really love this team. I mean, it was obvious from day one. You wanted to really win, and everyone thought when you signed here, it was a wasted contract. And I'd like to know, what did you see that we didn't see?
Well, I think you're seeing it now. I mean, mm-hmm. I think you've been seeing it. Obviously, 2011 was you know, not a struggle, but it was a tough year. We finished right at mm-hmm. 500. In my mind, we would have won that other game that we didn't get to play. So I call it a 500 season. But you could see at the end of that season. Mm-hmm. You could just kind of start to see what it was. And, you know, you're right. Like, a lot of people didn't see it or couldn't see it. And I think, you know, kudos to the learners and Mike Rizzo and Scott Boras for really kind of laying out this plan of you know, success that they had. And it was easy to see. I mean, you could see the talent. And you know, when you looked around the division, I knew the Phillies were, you know, were good at the time. But I knew that, you know, those guys were... You know, that team was getting older, and their farm system wasn't, you know, what the Nats farm system was. And, there's a lot of reasons, but I think, you know, what you've seen over the last 7 years is what we saw going into the whole thing. This was a great situation and an opportunity to go play for a team that was going to be good for a long time. And you know, here we are 7 years later with, you know, another shot at the postseason. So, you know. Again, I think not only did I make a good decision, but I made the right decision. But I want to win, so we still need to get it done.
We're going to get it done this year.
All right, well,
thank you so much.
Appreciate
it. Take care. My next guest is Richard Justice. He's a regular on the show, and he's not afraid to give out the award winners for 2017. On the phone is one of the best baseball writers in America. His name is Richard Justice. He's a columnist for MLB.com. Richard, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Richard, it's time for our end of the season awards. We need Cy Young, MVP, Rookie of the Year, Manager of the Year in both leagues.
And let's start with the MVP in the National League. Who do you think that is?
Well, I think it's never been more wide open in both leagues for the MVP than this year. For the whole season, for a while, I thought it was Paul Goldschmidt. Then I thought it was Anthony Rendon. Now, Bill, I think Chris Bryant may win it. If I had a vote, I'd probably today, I would vote for Anthony Rendon. But when you look at the season, Chris Bryant's put together, you know, more runs, more homers. And I'm just talking about him versus Anthony. And it's pretty impressive. Runs created and all that, a little bit higher, virtually tied in a lot of things. So it's kind of a coin flip. I think it's one of those things you revisit it again Sunday night. You know, and Votto's going to get votes. John Carlos Stanton, you and I have talked about a lot. I mean, 57 home runs will catch your attention.
Now, what about the American League? You know, Aaron Judge is hot now. Did he do enough to win the MVP?
You know, when I look at the 50 home runs, I mean, for a rookie, I have to vote for him. And I think we've established this year that the best player is Mike Trout. But he's played 41 fewer games than Aaron Judge. I mean, his numbers are off the chart since he came back. They're off the chart. He's almost caught him in wins above replacement. His on-base percentage is .446. His slugging is .629. He is the best player on the planet, and the competition is for second place. But he did miss 40 games. So then it comes down to, you know, I know there are people in Cleveland say, hey, our guy, Jose Ramirez, and maybe even Francisco Lindor is in the conversation. And Altuve, where I live, I thought Jose Altuve was going to win it the whole year, and he still might. But right now, if I had a vote, I'd vote for Aaron Judge.
What about the Cy Young in the National League?
The Cy Young in the National League, probably your guy, Max Scherzer. Sure. I forget who your guy is. But, you know, Strasburg has never been better than he is right now. And I think Scherzer and Strasburg could end up finishing 1 and 2 with that. You know, Greinke is going to get some support. Kershaw is going to be on some ballots. Mad Max is going to throw 200 innings again. I assume he's going to get another start. Strikeouts and all of that stuff. But Steven Strasburg has never been better than he's been right now. He started three fewer games. That's about the only difference. And he's not going to hit 200 innings. Zach Greinke's going to finish top three probably in all those things because he led his team to the postseason.
Right. The American League.
Same thing. I think it's pretty close. That's the one I've been paying attention to. So the question would be, did Chris Sale move ahead? Did Corey Kluber move ahead of Chris Sale? Chris Sale had a tough start last night. I can tell you the five names that I'm going to put on my ballot. And I think in this order, I think today I'm going to vote for Kluber. I mean, it's astonishing what he's done down the stretch. But I've looked at the numbers again and again, and there is not an eyelash difference between Chris Sale and Corey Kluber. I think Luis Severino is going to be third. I think Justin Verlander will be third or fourth. Severino will be third or fourth. And then who do you want to put fifth on there? Probably Carlos Carrasco. Mm-hmm. I mean, Chris Archer has been really good. Sonny Gray, you know, when you take his numbers in Oakland and his numbers in New York, they're good. But today I would vote Kluber 1, Sale 2, Severino 3, Verlander 4, and Carrasco 5th, subject to change. But that's really a tough one. You know, and I don't know how you felt when you voted. Like, you don't want to embarrass yourself. Like a couple of years ago, Dustin Pedroia won, but one guy left him completely off the ballot. Well, this case, nobody's going to embarrass themselves because we know Sale and Kluber are going to get all the first-place votes. It's just how are we going to divide them up, and what's it going to come down to? Is it going to come down to somebody, you know, somebody voting one of the guys fourth? There's always one idiot in the bunch.
Right. National League Rookie of the Year, that seems to be a no-brainer.
And I guess we're going to say Cody Bellinger, right?
That's correct.
I mean, he changed the whole – I mean, when they called him up, they won 80 out of 100, which basically is that. You know, they knew he was a prospect in spring training, and they thought he'd be good. They just thought, hey, where are we going to play him with Adrian Gonzalez here? He's one of those guys that's proved to be better than I mean, even the people that were off the charts didn't think that 68 extra base hits, he's got a chance to get 100 RBIs. He's great. Yeah, and then it comes down to who are we going to vote after that? Is it going to be Renfro? Josh Bell in Pittsburgh's been good. The shortstop in St. Louis, DeYoung, has been really good.
Yes.
It's Cody Bellinger's world.
No question. And the American League.
You're going to ask about the American League Rookie of the Year?
Yes.
His question is, who do we put second? Trey Mancini in Baltimore has been pretty dang good.
Yes,
that kid
has.
Matt Olson in Oakland is good. Benintendi is a really good player. And even though you have trouble thinking of him as a rookie, Yuli Gurriel in Houston has been very solid. He's hit close to 300, 20 homers, 40 doubles. Take that, Joey Two Bags. He's been really good. But Aaron Judge has just stolen the league. I mean,
it's a no-brainer.
Bill, the guy hit 179 last year. And in spring training, we looked around and said, okay, I want to see Greg Bird. I want to see Sanchez. I want to see Frazier when he comes up, Caprillion, since trade, all those guys. But we were worried, is Aaron Judge a swing and miss guy? He is a swing and miss guy, 204 strikeouts. Guy's OPS is over 1,000. And you just can't get past. The kid hit 50 homers and helped the New York Yankees go to the playoffs. And thanks to StatCast, he hits them in a place that you want to compare to Babe Ruth. There were games this year in the Yankee clubhouse where the players are going, where did that land? That's the highest compliment you can give a guy. And also from a personality standpoint, he said every right thing. He seems to be a guy that understands the big picture, that he plays for the New York Yankees, and ultimately you're judged by winning. But he's been phenomenal. God, he is great. I look like a great player.
You know, the thing I remember during spring training, it wasn't a guarantee that Aaron Judge was going to make the team. I mean, it was him and Aaron Hicks. And,
right.
And they decided the last minute that Aaron Judge was going to make the team. So
they just decided, there was such a fear of the swing and miss.
Correct.
And it's there. It's there. 204 strikeouts. He's walked 122 times. He went through a stretch. I don't know how he did it, but for the first 3 or 4 months of the season, all the things he did last year in terms of swinging the pitches outside the strike zone, he didn't do it. Then he had about a month where he did do it, and then he's regained himself. And it's just like how great is it for baseball that you have this big guy playing for the New York Yankees, leading the Yankees to the postseason, and hitting the ball out of sight. I mean, it truly doesn't get any better than that.
No, it doesn't. Manager of the Year, the National League. Who you like?
Well, I'm going to go with Torrey Lovello with the Diamondbacks. And I think it would be Torrey Lovello and Buddy Black, because they took two teams that weren't supposed to go anywhere and got them to the promised land. But I understand you can take, what Joe Maddon has done in taking a team with expectations through the roof and getting them back to the in a season when everything was hard, getting them back. Same thing with Dusty. I mean, they've had a lot of injuries in Washington, and Dusty's just been Dusty. You know, I mean, they're going to win close to 100 games, and Dusty never changes. And that off Matt Williams, who you know better than me, that's what they needed. They needed Dusty's resume and his poise and all that stuff. And Dave Roberts, exactly the same thing with Dave Roberts. He's got that personality that he's your friend, but he's your boss, and that's a very fine line. So I would vote for Torrey Lovello, but there are guys in this game that have done an extraordinary job.
No doubt about it.
And that's part of the fun of it.
The American League, it could be tough. I mean, Molitor has done a hell of a job. Who do you like?
Yeah, I'm going to vote for Molitor. I mean, the Minnesota Twins, you lose 101 year and you go to the playoffs the next year. That's just amazing. Just amazing. But again, you can make a case for what A.J. Hinch has done in Houston. Terry Francona, when you lead a team that, what have they lost about three times since the All-Star break or something? It's incredible what they've done. And also to take the team that's the favorite, that was the favorite on opening day, and to guide them through things. You know, they haven't had a lot of Michael Brantley, and some of their pitchers struggle, and then it all started clicking at once. He's a great manager. You know, and the guy that's not going to get any votes probably is Mike Socia, and this has been his finest year. I mean, if you ever wondered why he was a great manager, they lost everybody. They were gutted, and he kept them in. They've been in contention, you know, right until the last week.
Right, no doubt about it. Let's move on to the Marlins. Derek Jeter did something last week that shocked some people. He let some well-known people go: Andre Dawson, Tony Perez. I mean, it was like, wow, what's going on? What was your reaction?
I think when you take over a team, you need the institutional knowledge. And I think when you're talking about Dawson, Perez, and Jeff Conine, you're talking about three people that represent the franchise and get it. And I think when you make decisions, you have to have the best and the brightest people at a table, and you have to sit them down and get everybody's feedback. This is my opinion. Derek may end up being the greatest baseball executive ever, but this kind of just, it doesn't feel right, you know, to let guys like that go who meant so much to the game. And I understand you got to run your own thing, and you got to bring your own people in and all that. But those guys had some credibility in South Florida, and you know, that's your prerogative when you take over.
Right. Also, you know, as you know, we're in the last week of the season when we record this. I'd like to know, Richard, what impressed you the most about this season?
Well, I think it's how the game continued to evolve, that we now, hitters are taught to get the ball in the air, you know, and all this stuff about the balls being juiced, the bats being harder, PEDs and all that. I don't buy it. I just think the game has changed. And I I'm sure you talk to older players too who are taught to hit the ball on the ground up the middle. Well, hey, when you're running these defensive shifts that you and I both saw them, how they frustrated Mark Teixeira and Brian McCann and Albert and plenty of other guys. How do you defeat that? You put the ball in the air, and that's where the home runs are. That's where the OPS is, and that's been striking. But the other thing that I think is we only have five teams that made the playoffs last year and this year. So that means we've got a whole new generation of teams. The division winners all won. The favorites all won. But to see Colorado and Minnesota and Arizona get back in there. And I think it's always good for baseball when the Yankees are in, to see what the Brewers have done in a fast turnaround. I think all that's good for the game. You know, what Rob Manfred wanted is for every team on opening day to have a chance to win. They don't think like it was 20 years ago where only five teams can win. It's not that way anymore, and that's a cool thing.
Final question, Richard. Who's going to win the World Series?
The chalk says Cleveland, and I think the chalk is not – I mean, when you want to evaluate a team, they have everything you could ask for. The pitching, the starting pitching is dominant. The back of the bullpen is airtight, and they have those bats in the middle, Ramirez and Lindor and Encarnacion. And also there's a vibe. You can just see – I mean, it's always true with teams that play for Terry Francona that those guys have a lot of fun – and he keeps the atmosphere just right. But it just feels like there's a vibe. And also, you know, Houston, in the wake of the hurricane, it would be a cool thing to win. It would be great to see Washington break through, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But a World Series in Cleveland, I think, would be a pretty cool thing.
No doubt. It's been a long time. So, Richard, listen, thank you so much, as always. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, Bill.
My next guest is Robert Ford. He's the radio play-by-play voice of the Houston Astros, and he feels this team will go far in the postseason. On the phone is the Astros play-by-play voice, Robert Ford. Robert, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Robert, first of all, before we start talking about the Astros, I'd like to know how you're feeling. I understand you had appendicitis, and how are you feeling?
Thanks for asking. I feel great, pretty much 100%. And it's been great to finally get back on the air and call baseball games. Being gone for 19 games is way too long.
Yes, I know that feeling. Let's start off with Justin Verlander. It seems like he's been a godsend since he joined the club. Could you talk about what he's done?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, if you just look at how excited, I mean, obviously the fans are excited to get a player like Justin Verlander, but you look at how excited the guys in the Astros clubhouse were just to have him. I mean, they know what he's done. They know what sort of presence he has. They know he's pitched in a lot of big games and has won a lot of big games. And I think it's just had a tremendous impact. And then you look at the baseball side of it, the on the field part, it gives you basically another ace along with Dallas Keuchel. And I mean, if that's your 1-2 punch going into the postseason, you have to feel pretty good about your chances against any team, regardless of who they might match up against.
Now, Robert, the team's in the postseason for the second time in 3 years. What will make this postseason different?
Well, I think certainly Verlander makes a difference. As we mentioned, you know, having he and Keuchel at the top of the rotation, they didn't really have that in 2015. Also, 2015, it was a lot different. It was a younger ball club. It was a team that didn't really have any expectations. It was an accomplishment just to get to the postseason that year. And so this year, it's a little different, especially after missing out last year. We're in the playoff hunt until the last weekend, and they had higher hopes for 2016. But coming into this year, the focus all year has been about getting back to the postseason, about winning the division. So it's not going to be enough just to win the division this year. This team is expecting to have a deep postseason run.
Talk about the job A.J. Hinch has done. This is a guy I'm really happy he was given a second chance. He wasn't given a chance in Arizona, and he's done a hell of a job.
He has. I think the two biggest jobs for a manager in this day and age are to manage the bullpen effectively and to manage the personalities in the clubhouse. And I think AJ does both very well. He is very transparent. Everybody knows where they stand with him. He's always communicating. You know, I remember talking with AJ once early in his first year with the Astros, and he said, you know, he felt like during his time in Arizona, you know, a bit inexperienced, probably wasn't ready to manage then, but he felt like he didn't communicate as well as he probably should have then. And so he said, you know, I made up my mind, if I ever manage again, I'm going to over-communicate. I'm going to go above and beyond in that regard. And he certainly has done that. And he has the respect of the guys in that clubhouse. He does a good job of merging some of the analytics and some of the things that come from the front office, in some cases serving as a buffer, which is also an important job for a manager. He really is the total package and the perfect manager for this team.
You watched this team all year long. What was the most impressive thing you saw this year regarding the Astros?
The most impressive thing that I saw this year probably has to be the emergence of a couple of guys, Brad Peacock and Marwin Gonzalez. When you look at Peacock, I mean, he had 11 wins in his first five big league seasons, and he has 12 wins this year. He started the year in the bullpen, was a long guy, really made the team because he was out of options. Not that he didn't win a job in spring training, but obviously being out of options helps. But had been hurt much of the last couple of years and ineffective a lot of his big league career before that. But he's really stepped it up this year. And, I mean, he's going to be in the rotation for the postseason, it would appear right now. And I don't know that anybody would have predicted that coming into the year. Meanwhile, Marwin Gonzalez, he has doubled the number of walks that he had last year. Last year, he had a career-high 22 walks. He has close to 50 walks this season. And his plate discipline has been a lot better. He's got over 20 home runs. He's batted above 300 most of the season. And it really comes down to him being a little bit more selective and laying off some of the breaking balls he was chasing in the past. And it really has been amazing. And then when you throw in the defensive versatility he has, can play all over the field, has played six different positions, it just gives the Astros another weapon.
Wow. Any tough roster decisions the Astros have to make before the postseason starts?
Well, I think, obviously, you look at who's going to be, you know, the last one or two pitchers in the bullpen. I think the Astros also have to figure out what they're going to do after Keuchel and Verlander in the rotation. Mentioned Brad Peacock's probably in the rotation. That four spot probably goes to Lance McCullers if he's healthy. Mm-hmm. He's going to have one more start probably over the weekend in Boston before the season ends. But that's something they're going to have to figure out. A lot of that will just depend on McCullers' health. And then, you know, what do you do with that last spot in the bullpen? Do you go with another starting pitcher, like, say, a Charlie Morton or a Colin McHugh? Do you go with a guy like Francis Martez, who has tremendous upside but can be really inconsistent? And the other part, too, is who's that last position player. Probably going to be a third catcher on the roster that enables AJ to pinch hit for or pinch run for Brian McCann or Evan Gattis, and also you can use Evan Gattis as a designated hitter if you have a third catcher. Juan Centeno and Max Stassi are both up right now. Which guy do you go with? Stassi probably a little better offensively. Centeno probably a little better defensively. So those are the things that the Astros have to figure out at this point.
And you know, you mentioned injuries. How's Altuve?
He's fine. He could have played yesterday with that left forearm contusion. It looked a lot scary initially. Thought maybe it got closer to the hand or the wrist. But you know, did x-rays. They were negative. Just some bruising, apparently. And could be in the lineup today. If I had to guess, I would think AJ might wait until tomorrow when the Astros open up a series in Boston. But could certainly see him play today as well. But dodge the bullet with that hit-by-pitch for Altuve.
How's Carlos Beltran? And I'm asking this because of what he's going through in his homeland of Puerto Rico. How's he doing?
He's doing, as you could imagine, like a lot of the players from Puerto Rico after everything happened with Hurricane Maria. It's been tough. You know, he did an interview yesterday. He's donated $1 million to help with the relief efforts. And he and the Astros Foundation and the city of Houston and some others are teaming up to send supplies down to Puerto Rico, a plane of supplies. Astros owner Jim Crane a part of that. And Beltran spoke to the media about it yesterday, and he started to break down. He was very emotional. And, yeah, I mean, I can only imagine it may be a small island. It may not be the most populous place on earth, but people from Puerto Rico are very proud of where they're from. And to see it just devastated the way it has been, and knowing that it's going to take a long time for things to even get close to where they were before. I can only imagine just all the emotions for a guy like Carlos Beltran, who's very proud, and anyone who's from Puerto Rico.
Do you see him taking time off just to be with his family?
I don't know that he'll necessarily do that. I think it probably helps a little bit that, you know, his immediate family, you know, he lives in New York City in the off season, so his immediate family is in New York. I don't know that he would necessarily take any time off at this point in the year, but there's no question that that it's not far from his mind.
If the season ended today, we're taping a week before the postseason. The mm-hmm. Astros would play the Boston Red Sox. How do you see that matchup?
Well, I think it's going to come down to how the Astros handle the Red Sox left-handed pitching, and then the Red Sox have a ton of it. You look at the Astros' offensive numbers against lefties, and they're about comparable to what they do against righties, but the Astros are 20-23 in games started by left-handed pitchers this year. And so you look at Chris Sale, you look at Drew Pomerantz, you look at Eduardo Rodriguez, and right there, three left-handed starting pitchers, potentially the starters for the first three games of the postseason for the Red Sox. So that's something that the Astros are going to have to contend with if they're going to get past the Red Sox. I think that's going to be probably the biggest part, the biggest subplot of that series, should those two teams meet.
I tell you, this Astros team looks so different than they were 2 years ago when they went to the postseason. I see, in a good way, I see an arrogance about this team that they feel they can go all the way. Do you feel that arrogance?
Oh, no question. No question. You know, like I mentioned before, I think it's one of those things where going into the season, the goal wasn't just to get into the postseason. It was to get to the World Series and win a World Series. The expectations are very high for this team, and they're not high because of any external pressure. They're high because of that's the expectation in that clubhouse. This is what they feel like they're good enough to do, and that's part of the reason why, you know, getting a guy like Justin Verlander was so big to the guys in that clubhouse and just really buoyed this team's spirits.
No question. Robert Ford, listen, thank you so much. I'm glad you're feeling better, and you do a great job.
All right, thanks. Always good to talk to you, Bill.
You got it. Take care.
My next guest is outfielder Brett Gardner, and he believes the Yankees will go far in the postseason.
Brett Gardner, thank you so much for being on the show. Brett, first of all, I just want to know, how good is it to be back in the postseason?
Well, it feels good. It's something we're definitely excited about, and you know, we're not there quite yet. We already clinched a spot, and obviously we got a little more work to do here in the regular season before we get there. But I know that you know, it's quite an accomplishment. I think coming into spring training, everybody kind of had us pegged as a team that was kind of in a rebuilding phase, and to be able to have a good year, and a lot of these young guys really just come onto the scene and really just with performances by Judge and Didi and Gary Sanchez and Severino and even a guy like Chad Green, I mean, who doesn't get talked about very often. You know, I mean, it's just a lot of fun for us veteran guys to see some of these young guys really come into their own and play such a big role on such a good team.
How surprised are you that they progressed so quickly? Because you're right, everyone was talking about next year was the year you had to go to the postseason.
Sure. You know, I mean, I'm really not surprised by too much anymore, man. I've been around for a little while, and I've seen a lot of crazy stuff happen, and it's a crazy game, and it has a way of keeping everybody honest. And you know, these young kids, not only do they have a lot of talent, but they you know, are good people and have a good head on their shoulders, and really, really work hard, and have a good idea of what they want to accomplish and what they're striving towards, and. You know, it's really a joy to see and to get to watch firsthand. And, you know, I can't say I'm surprised by too much because I've seen these kids, I've been around these kids and know how much talent they have and how hard they work. And it's nice to see all that hard work paying off.
The bullpen is back in shape now. How far can this team go? I think you guys can go far.
Well, I mean, I think we're capable of winning the World Series. I mean, but it's all one step at a time, you know, and obviously, you know, right now we just need to take things one day at a time and focus on ourselves and focus on continuing to play good baseball. Our starting pitching has really been throwing the ball well lately. And as you said, our bullpen, I feel like, is the best bullpen in baseball. And once you get to the postseason, we all know it's, I don't want to say all about pitching, but mostly about pitching. And, you know, I love the pitching staff that we have and love our chances against whoever we play. And, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, focus on the things that we need to focus on, continue to get our work done, and take things one day at a time.
Your bullpen was the one that helped you guys win in 2009. Do you see any comparison between that bullpen in 2009 to this one?
Well, I mean, that was a long time ago, and I don't have the best memory, but, you know, I can't help but think that this bullpen's better. I mean, you know, nothing against, you know, the guys that were in that bullpen, but, you know, the depth that we have in our bullpen is pretty special. So, you know, I love the group of guys that we have, and I feel really good about our chances, and, you know, I'm just happy that, you know, for not just the guys in this room, the organization, but our fans, you know, they come out each and every night and support us, whether we're at home or on the road. And I know that they're excited for us to be back in the postseason, just being around a few people around town the last few days. And and they're excited about it, as are we.
What about your season? Another quality season. What do you think about your season so far?
Well, I mean, you know, kind of like some previous seasons for me, you know, kind of inconsistent at times. And that's one of the most frustrating things about baseball is when you think you've got things figured out and things are going well, it'll find a way to humble you, and you got to find a way to pick yourself up and get going again. And, you know, there's times in the season where I feel like I played pretty well, and there's times in the season where I just couldn't seem to get things going. But for the most part, I think as a whole, it's been a pretty good year. My goal going into every year is to be able to play as many games as possible. I don't know that 100 or 162 games is realistic these days anymore, but you know, to play in a bunch of games and always be available to try and do things to help the team win. And you know, not just myself, but a lot of guys, you know, I think have had pretty good years. And and really, you know, it's been a collective effort to get back to where we're at, and it's been a lot of fun to be around all these guys.
You've been here quite a while. Tell me what it's like to watch Aaron Judge. 50 homers, can you believe that?
Yeah, 50 homers. 50 homers is crazy, and you know, it's one of those things where he is literally capable of putting a team on his back and carrying them, literally and figuratively, probably. But you know, he's just he's a very, very, very special talent, and it's a lot of fun for us to get to watch him firsthand on a daily basis, and the changes that he's made and the improvements that he's made, and just the season that he's had has been remarkable. And everybody talks about the power, but he changes the game on the bases, he changes the game on the defensive side of the ball. He's got, you know, I don't know exactly, but if I had to guess, he's got close to 120 runs scored and 120 walks, and it's just, it's really, really special to see, man. It's a lot of fun to watch.
What has he done compared to last year when you saw him last year when he was struggling to this year? What has he done that impressed you?
Well, I think, you know, you always want to see, you know, it's easy for him when things are going great, when he's the best player in baseball the first half of the season, winning the home run derby. And it's easy for guys to be in a good mood and to treat people a certain way and to be, you know, to be a certain way towards your teammates and to fans and everybody when things are going well. But when things are going bad, is really when you see who somebody really is. And he hasn't changed through it all. You know, he had, I don't know if it was July, August, you know, him just as everybody else had his share of struggles. And, you know, he's the same guy every single day. And coming in, sticking to his routine, believing in what he was doing, getting his work in. Didn't matter if he was, you know, three for three with two homers and a walk the day before, or 0-for-4 with three strikeouts. He was going to be the same guy. He was going to be the same teammate. And just a lot of fun to watch, and a lot of fun to see the way that he's made changes and adjustments, not just physically and mechanically on the field, but mentally to his game, and really taking things to the next level. And I think that's a big reason that he's had as much success as he's had.
Is he the MVP in your book?
Well, I think he is. I mean, he's my teammate. So, you know, if I was a teammate of another guy who was in consideration for the MVP, I might not feel the same way. But he's an MVP for me because of what he does on both sides of the ball and what he does, the way he can impact a game. And, you know, he, like I said, he's a guy that's got a lot of special talent, but he's been able to harness that talent and really put up just a remarkable season.
Final question. Joe Girardi, hell of a job this year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I everything starts with everything behind the scenes, going into spring training and the coaching staff, and, you know, not just getting the personnel in order, but getting the players ready to play for the season and staying prepared and communicating with his players. And, you know, he's the only manager I've ever played for in the big leagues, and I love to be able to keep it that way. Just a lot of fun to play for him.
You want him back?
Of course, man. I want him back as long as I'm here, and I want to be here for a while longer too. So, you know, we'll see what happens. All that stuff will have its way of playing out over the off season. And I know I'm not going to be here forever. You know, I know that your post-playing career gets up on you a lot quicker than most people think. But I'd love to be back here for a few more years. And it's been a lot of fun for me this year. This has probably been the most fun I've had playing baseball, just being around these young kids and winning and surprising people and proving people wrong. So it's been a lot of fun this season.
Greg Garner, thank you so much.
Awesome, man.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
C.C. Sabathia is next, and this could be his last year with the Yankees.
C.C. Sabathia, thank you so much for being on the show. C.C., one hell of a year for you, and I guess health has a lot to do with it. Why are you having a productive season?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, just being able to be healthy, go out and kind of repeat my delivery, it's been a big thing for me, and, you know, it's helped me for sure.
And, I mean, and also, I think you're one of the keys to this postseason, and how do you feel about that?
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, you know, hopefully we can make a good run. I can pitch well, and we end this thing with a parade.
Yeah. One hell of a year by Aaron Judge. Tell me, when you're in that dugout, what's it like watching Aaron Judge?
Oh, it's a lot of fun to be able to watch that guy, man. He does, you know, things that nobody can do. You know, obviously hitting the ball as far as he can. You know, but he's a good hitter. You know, he has good at bats, and you know, he's carried us to this point.
The thing I love about him, he's even keel. Even when he was slumping, I didn't see any anger. I mean, that's got to be good for this team.
Yeah, for sure. You know, that's the biggest thing is, you know, the best players can stay even keel through the ups and downs, and it's a long baseball season, so you know you got to have that. You got to have that weapon.
CC, you won the World Series in 2009. I think your bullpen right now is better than what you had in 2009. How far can this team go?
Yeah, we can go, you know. I mean, we have the potential to take it all the way, obviously, I feel like. But, yeah, you're right. You know, our bullpen is really strong, and it's obviously the strength of our team. You know, probably the best in the league.
No question about it. And what about Chad Green? Hell of a bullpen guy.
Yeah, he's had a great year for us. You know, obviously finding that role and, you know, being lights out for us, you know, hopefully we can just continue to have success and keep going and, you know, put together a good career.
CC, I got to ask about you. I mean, hell of a year this year. How much do you have in the tank?
Hopefully, you know, a lot more. You know, just keep going. I want to, you know, continue to play after this year, but, you know, have to wait and see how that goes.
And overall, you think you've had a great year?
Yeah, I feel like I did. I feel like I, you know, helped the team win and But like I said, hopefully we can continue to keep that going and make a good run in the playoffs.
CC, I'm not going to lie to you. There's something that bothers me when you're on the mound that opposing teams do. And I think it's not – the ethics to me is bad. Some of these teams, like the Twins last week, bunting on you like it was nobody's business. I think that's wrong. And how do you feel about that?
Certain teams I expect it. I'm playing against the Twins my whole career, and I know what to expect out of him. So it just is what it is. It's up to me to not let that kind of take me out of my game and just keep going and try to get these guys out.
I totally agree. How do you not get angry?
Yeah, it's just that's part of it. You got to, stay even keel like we just talked about and go out and throw strikes.
And what's ahead with CC Sabathia? I mean, I know it's your last year with the Yankees, contract-wise. Do you want to come back? What's your plans?
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously, I love this place. It's been my home the last 9 years, and hopefully I can continue to be a Yankee.
They treated you so well.
They have, yeah.
No question.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Take care.
My final guest is Yankees field reporter Marith Marakovich. She's one of the best in the game, and she has a lot to say about the Yankees, too.
I'm with Yankee reporter Marith Marakovich. Thank you so much for being on the show. Marith, the Yankees are in the postseason. And what impressed you the most about the Yankees this year?
I think it's the fact that the young guys, where you really didn't know if they were going to produce, how they were going to fit in. You saw a little bit of it last year, but the way Aaron Judge worked in the offseason came back pretty much a different player. The way other guys worked in the offseason came back almost like different players. And it's a good mix of young guys and veteran guys that have helped lead this team. And I think as quickly as they meshed, that was maybe a little bit of a surprise. And how much some of those young guys have produced has been a bit of a surprise and impressive.
No doubt about it. Now, talk about Aaron Judge. Now, last year at this time, he was struggling. What is he doing now that's different?
Well, he's not swinging at as many pitches outside of the zone. Even when he went through that little spurt here in August where he struggled, he was kind of getting away from his normal approach. Still walking a little bit, but it seemed like he was chasing a little bit more, striking out a little bit more. And when he's really locked in, he's using all fields. And that's when you know he's seeing the ball well. He's doing everything he'd like to do mechanically. So I think that's really been part of the difference for him. But he's had such unbelievable success this year and handled it all very well that the Yankees should be excited. Not only about him, but guys like Gary Sanchez and him and Greg Bird, who all homered yesterday, for the foreseeable future.
Now, talk about Didi Gregorius. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. I did not expect him to be as productive as he's been the last 2 years. What is he doing that's made him so productive?
If you ask Didi, he said it's business as usual. I just spoke to him a couple of minutes ago and asked him a similar question. He said, his approach has been the same, despite the fact that he's hit more balls out this year than he has ever hit in his major league career. He said he's focused on trying to hit long line drives. He thinks as he's been getting older, he's been getting stronger. He's been lifting more. And he thinks that's maybe part of the increased power. But aside from that, he will tell you, that not much has changed. I do remember when he first came over here, there was some question, could he hit lefties? And I think he really took that to heart and worked on that and did not want to be known as a guy that couldn't hit lefties or a guy that wasn't out there every day and was a platoon player. And you can tell he made a lot of adjustments, made a lot of strides, and defensively he's been very good as well.
No doubt. Now, talk about, this is a guy who replaced Jeter.
Yeah.
I mean, I did not expect this guy to replace Jeter. I mean, I expected a lot more shortstops to be playing there.
It's tough because how do you replace a legend like Derek Jeter? He meant so much to this organization for a long time. And, when Didi first got here, you wonder if that was maybe part of his early struggles in that first month, the fact that he was hearing it. He was asked about it all the time. Are you going to be that guy? You can't be that guy. And that has to be tough for a young player to deal with. And, we talk about so much youth on the team. Didi isn't old. He's viewed as a veteran in that clubhouse, but he's, 27 years old? So I think that once he realized, and he may have always realized this, but, I'm Didi Gregorius. I'm going to do what I can do to help this team win. I'm not Derek Jeter. I'm not trying to be Derek Jeter. I think that was a big part of it, just kind of realizing I am who I am, and I'm going to go out there and play the way I know I'm capable of playing.
I want to talk about Joe Girardi. Now, to me, I know Joe Girardi won a championship in 2009, but I think the last few years, I think he's done one hell of a job. What do you think about the job he's done?
Well, a lot of times they have not had the talent that they had been known for in the late 90s, early 2000s. And he's managed to do a good amount with, at times, a little. And I think that has stood out over the past couple of years. He's definitely been able to get a lot out of his players. And now you're seeing, they've been talking about that youth movement, how he deals with some of the younger players and how they have been receptive to him. So I think he's been here for a long time for a reason. And I think if he wants to be, he will be here for a long time in the future.
I think people forget what Joe Girardi did with the 2006 Marlins, which was a young team.
Very young team. A lot of similarities.
And they were in the pennant race that year, too. So I think people forgot about all that.
Yeah, they forget he was even there. I think he at times would like to forget that he was even there. But he's been such a mainstay here, and the fact that he has been tenured as long as he has, I just think speaks volume about the work he's been able to do and the respect he has by the players, the organization, everybody around.
You think he stays?
I think he does. I think he does. I mean, this team coming into the season, you couldn't have predicted that Aaron Judge was going to hit 50 home runs. You really didn't know what you were going to get. Everybody said rebuilding year, rebuilding year. Mm-hmm. Certainly not a rebuilding year. They made the playoffs. The team's feeling very good about themselves right now, and who knows what the postseason has in store for them. But I think the Yankees would most likely keep Joe Girardi. But you never know.
Right. Meredith, I just want to tell you, you're one hell of a field reporter, and I want women to know, what made you get into the sport, and how can they get into the sport?
Well, I was always an athlete, and what most washed-up athletes do when they can't play anymore, they talk about it, right? So I kind of went that path. I was a volleyball player. It doesn't really translate to baseball, but I was very fortunate early in my career when I decided this is what I wanted to do. I worked for a small company in Allentown, Pennsylvania, Service Electric Sports, and they wound up getting the rights to the Reading Phillies and eventually the AAA team, the Iron Pigs, which is the Phillies affiliate. Mm-hmm. So I had been there for a little while and they assigned me that, which I was extremely excited about, and I really fell in love with the sport of baseball. Prior to that, I did not, as a kid, my parents were big basketball fans, so we did not go, I grew up in the Philadelphia area, go to a lot of Phillies games. We go like maybe one a year. And when you're little, you know, you're bouncing off the walls, so we thought it was boring, but as an adult, it's a much different feel, and you know, I'm lucky. I couldn't be in a better spot right now.
Tell me how much your parents encouraged you.
Oh, they encouraged me a ton, and I would love to go back and watch some of those early tapes where they said, oh, that was great, that was great. I know they were lying, but you know, they were always the parents that were shuttling us back and forth. I have two older brothers, to sporting events, to whatever it is that we were doing, and supportive the entire way, whether we had good days or bad days. So it's fun now. I get to kind of, I guess, reward them a little bit in a sense in getting them to some games, and they get to come here and they get to watch. And you know, they're still supporting to this day. They have the Yes Network where they live. They pay the extra fee for it, so I appreciate them for that. And, you know, they'll still shoot me a text after just about every pregame. So it's pretty
That's
cool.
That's great. And my last question, what about the people in journalism who have helped you out and you become one of the best?
You know, growing up in the Philadelphia area, I remember speaking to Mark Zumoff, who does the play-by-play for the Sixers. He came to LaSalle University and did a talk to the kids that wanted to get into the field, and I just thought he was the coolest and nicest. I'd correspond with him back and forth, and he actually, I never went to it, but ran a broadcasting camp, and it's so crazy the way life works out. I wound up being on the broadcast team with him when I covered the Sixers.
Oh, okay.
So he was a guy that was very cool, and he put me in touch with Dee Lynam, who at the time was the sideline reporter for the Sixers. So she spoke to me a little bit, but it's been people throughout where, you know, I'm a production assistant for Fox, running, getting coffee, doing all that, where maybe it's one of the announcers has 2 minutes to just give me a little bit of advice. And there's been a lot of that over the years, and I would encourage people that do want to get into this, ask questions. Make yourself available. And yeah, you're going to have to do some of the grunt work, but make the most of those opportunities and see what else you can gain and what else you can learn from it.
Congratulations on a great career. Thank you so much.